Did you hit record?
I'm hitting record now. Don't know what I think about this new Skype animation. It's really weird.
It's like techno. It's not what I was expecting from Skype.
Yeah, it looks like it would have been super cool in like 2001.
It's a little bit late to the game. There's lots of like fading and like almost some ombre going on too here. Trying to be fancy.
You know, with some things, if it's like, you know, you're a practical product, you're being designed by Microsoft, I think, just go with clean and practical. Don't try to do trendy. Just stick to what you know. Make the product good. Don't try to go for trendy. That's not your thing.
There you go, Microsoft. That advice was free.
Exactly. People pay me for that. So are we ready to start follow-up?
Yes. Our first piece of follow-up has to do with the very nice iTunes review that we read in the last episode. We were really grateful and also very kind of like curious because we didn't know who this came from. It'd be one thing if like my mom wrote us an iTunes review, but this was a total stranger. So we were really excited. And after doing some digging, we figured out that the review came from someone in Canada. So we're giving a shout out to all of Canada because we don't know who specifically, but so the shout out goes to everyone in Canada.
So this technically could be your mother and we just don't know.
No, trust me, it wasn't her. I know it wasn't her. Okay. But yeah, thank you to that person in Canada.
It's weird how feedback only really counts if it comes from somebody who doesn't really know you.
I mean,
because there isn't like a social obligation to be like, oh, you did a great job, sweetie. It's just, no, people actually think that maybe you did. Okay, so I have the next item of follow-up, which is travel. Two travel follow-ups.
Okay.
And both don't make me look great. So my very good friend has been listening to the podcast. And did she have nice comments for me? No. I feel like people in your life are nicer to you than the people in my life.
Okay, you know what? They're listening to this right now. So if you want to change that and turn it around, like, this is your time.
No. Shout out to Haley's friends and family.
Which is also kind of a shout out to Canada.
Exactly. So my friend was listening and her only comment was, sweetie, we say The Hague and not Haag when referring to the place in the Netherlands.
I didn't know that.
So apparently I said it wrong, like over and over again in episode one. So The Hague, at least in this country of the UK, they say The Hague. So I wanted to correct that. Patent points to my friends as well.
Maybe you were saying it the like North American way?
Maybe. Very, very possible.
Okay, hold on. I thought you were going to say that like she was from The Hague. And she was like, this is how you say it. But she's from the UK.
She's very proper from the UK.
Okay.
So she's, I trust her judgments on how I pronounce things because I do it wrong sometimes. And apparently Hague is the correct pronunciation, which I also recently got pointed out to me. It's pronunciation and not pronunciation, which I...
People in Canada and the US would say the same thing.
Okay, I'm glad you don't think I'm totally weird because I had no idea I was saying it wrong. Then I had another thing about follow-up as well, and this is really embarrassing, and I think I said in the last episode that I was going to Louisiana for a wedding.
Yes,
it's actually Jackson, Mississippi.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, so those are not the same place. I know that. I don't know why I had the wrong destination in my mind, but Jackson, Mississippi is the place.
Got it. Good to know.
Just wanted to correct that. Yeah, so, but I think you have the next item on follow-up.
Yes. There is a line-for-line quote in the last episode where I say, I keep my email notifications on. I couldn't turn them off. It's just not possible for me in my current role. And I re-listened to the edited version of that episode I think I laughed out loud at myself because in the time from when we recorded that episode to when you edited it and I listened to it, I had turned off all of my email notifications and resigned to only checking email twice a day. And I've even written a blog post about it. So I really feel like foot in mouth at this point, but I am proud of myself for making that change. It was funny to hear that I thought I couldn't, and I had a great teacher show me how to do that. So I am no longer a notification person for email, and if I can't even tell you how freeing I feel. So free.
Yeah, congratulations, welcome to the other side.
Thank you
You're
very much
welcome over here.
Do you have cookies on this side?
No, I don't know anything about cookies. I'm not on that side.
Okay.
It's interesting you're talking about turning off notifications because actually, this is what I like about having these conversations with you as my friend and also now on the podcast, is because you have this belief that this is the only way to do things. And so often can you be proven wrong about something?
Mm-hmm.
And so I think it's really interesting to have these conversations because sometimes you're like, oh yeah, I didn't think about that. So that's really cool. So after we talked and you were like, no, I have no social media notifications on, I actually turned off my Instagram notifications and I turned off my Twitter notifications.
Ooh.
And what was really interesting, oh, and I had long since turned off Snapchat notifications. And the interesting thing is with Instagram notifications is within the app, they have really granular settings.
Yes.
Shout out to Instagram. I really, really appreciate that because the Twitter notifications that really annoyed me were like the random unrelated ones.
Ones where it's like three people that you follow have now followed this fourth person. And would you also like to follow this fourth person?
Yeah. And that on Twitter pissed me off so much. So that's why I turned off all Twitter notifications. And then on Instagram, I turned it off. So basically, I don't really get any notifications except if I get a direct message, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, good for you.
But then for Twitter, I actually ended up having to turn the notifications on again because I've been working on promoting something, which we can talk about later in the podcast. And I was missing when people were tweeting at me, like related to that promotion. So I had to turn them back off for that purpose. And it is really annoying because I have 4 Twitter accounts, I think, on my phone.
Oh my goodness. And yeah.
So I kept, and I think a lot of them follow all of the other ones. So if I was promoting something from my own personal Twitter account, I would get notifications that I had been tweeting about something on my different Twitter accounts.
Oh my goodness.
And it was driving me insane. And I know Twitter doesn't like to make fun product decisions. They just do whatever they want. So I know they don't care what my opinion about this is, but the Twitter notifications drive me crazy because I found out now that I literally possibly shouldn't turn them off, but that a lot of them are really annoying.
Yeah, that's so meta, getting notifications about your other accounts on the account that you're currently on. Like, that's like a weird social media problem.
I know, only like people like us probably have this problem.
Yeah, that's really funny.
Oh, and sorry, then I had Snap as well. Sorry, I just want to quickly finish that.
Yeah, go for it.
So I turned off all Snap notifications as well. And then I realized I just never check Snap. I'm having a Snapchat in ages now. And now I get messages sometimes from people on other messaging services. And they're like, are you not seeing my snaps? So now I have to every now and then like go and like binge watch all my snaps. And then comment like way later. So actually turning them off, it kind of teaches you how to use the platforms, which I thought was interesting.
Yeah, that is neat. I think that when I turned off notifications for Snapchat is the moment when it really ended for me because I realized I didn't want to be in there and I didn't have any more. Like, I didn't have very many people in there and I was like, they can move to Instagram stories for me.
I feel really bad though because I feel like they made this like instantaneous messaging thing a thing. And I feel like they're getting punished for like not being bought by Facebook. So I feel kind of sad about that. But I completely agree. I noticed they never reach for Snapchat. I also think just like the tags on Instagram are so good because it's really fun to be able to location tag or participate in a hashtag or something like that.
Yeah, totally. I think Instagram's done a really good job, honestly. And I get what you like. I definitely feel the moral dilemma of like most of the top applications in social network are owned by Facebook, and Snapchat is one of the few, but it just doesn't do it for me. And I think that one of the things, I don't know, maybe we don't even have to get into this, but one of the things was like Snapchat was really slow to add on things that users were asking for, and Instagram added some of them on immediately. So like brands being able to easily look at analytics, like Snapchat didn't make that easy at all. Or locations and hashtags, like you mentioned, or people being able to find you. I think that was the biggest thing on Snapchat. It can be really tough to build an audience if you don't have an audience elsewhere.
Yeah. What I miss about the Snapchat, though, is I feel like Instagram is definitely more like, oh, look at how glamorous and perfect my life is. Whereas I feel like Snapchat is genuinely more, here's where I can talk to my family and my friends. And it's not, it's one of the only platforms, apart from like all the private messaging things, that isn't like lifestyle, look how amazing my life is, all of that stuff, which I did kind of like about Snapchat. But yeah, I guess then I find myself just not reaching for it. And after I turned off the notification, I don't really check it.
Yeah. So I think you have the next follow-up item too.
Oh yeah, on the family Slack. So I don't know if you even realized, but when you said that, like, oh, I guess you put family second because it comes after work, like my heart literally sank a little bit.
No.
And I was like, oh my god, I'm a whore. And even because I'm editing the podcast, so I hear everything like multiple times. Every time I heard it, like my heart sank and I was like, oh, can't believe I'm putting like family second. That is so horrifying. And then it kind of dawned on me that Slack is like a work tool. So having Slack and having my work first for Slack actually kind of makes sense because I use Slack for work and it doesn't define my relationship with my family. But I had to go through that entire process to kind of be at ease with my Slack order.
I really did not mean to cause such a moral crisis for you. So I was just poking fun. But I'm glad you figured it out for yourself.
Yeah. Oh, and then there was just the one final thing is there's this writer girl I follow on Twitter who I really like. Her name is Carrie Provenzano, I think is how you say her name. And she just posted on her blog that she uses OmniFocus. This is like a follow-up on the Todoist OmniFocus thing. But she has a huge crush on Todoist.
Wow.
And I just felt this like camaraderie in this position. And then she's actually gone further because she was working on this project where she had to use Todoist. So she has used it. And I'll link to her blog. She's such a good writer. She's one of my favorite copywriters I've come across on the internet. She's really, really good. And she basically, I haven't tried to use Todoist, but she sums up really well. And basically her point is that OmniFocus is more powerful, but feels more old school. And Todoist is like more sleek and more clean, but it isn't as powerful, basically.
I feel like this isn't the last time we'll be talking about this.
No, I feel like this is going to be an ongoing thing. You got a big trip coming up, don't you?
I do. I am flying Denver to your home country of Iceland for a very short layover, after which I will be in your other home country of the UK visiting you in London. And that is coming up very quickly in December. So I'm very excited.
I am losing my mind. I'm so excited to have you here and hang out with you. And also, I guess we should fill people in that we're going to see the Harry Potter theater show.
Have we not mentioned that on this podcast yet? I can't believe it.
I know. Well, we've mentioned that you were going, but I don't think we mentioned that we were going to go together.
Okay, well, we are going together with my sister, and it is going to be a whole day. It takes a whole day to watch the two parts, so it's going to be pretty crazy. I'm really pumped. I'm definitely pumped for that, but I'm also mostly just pumped that, like, I've never been in Europe anywhere, like, other than Canada for the Christmas season. And I really just feel like if you're going to go somewhere, London has a great Christmas scene. But I'm like, I'm pretty excited for Christmas decorations in London and Christmas markets and food. And I hope it snows. It probably won't snow, though. Will it snow?
Okay. See, I come from Iceland, so I have such a, like, a different experience. To me, London is not as overly Christmassy as I would like it to be. And then I said this to my mom, and she came to see me in December, and all we did was walk up and down Christmas markets, and everything was really crowded and like Christmas vibes, and it was like chilly, and everybody was wearing coats and big scarves, and she was like, I don't know what you're talking about.
yeah, I'm pretty sure London is Christmassy.
But like back home, there are like Christmas lights in every single window. On like, you could go on any random street and there are Christmas lights. Like, here, most of the Christmas things are quite kind of retail-oriented. So if you go on the big shopping streets, they have lots of Christmas lights. And it's quite kind of, like, commercially Christmassy.
Ah, I see.
But what I miss about home is that you're just walking down the street and you just see people who put up Christmas lights outside their doors or in their windows or something. But, like, so many people here rent and loads of people don't have any space, or they don't own the front door or something. So people are not really in the same kind of mood about it as back home. But, like, I am very excited to have you. I feel like my Christmas start, like, the day you arrive.
What?
Because we're probably going to be doing, like, loads of Christmassy things. I mean, just, like, the Christmas season. And then I'm having another friend come when you leave. And then I'm going to go home for Christmas. And that's just going to be a full-on crazy ride like it always is. And I'm very, very excited about Christmas this year.
Yeah, me too. It's going to be great. I can't wait to see you. That's going to be wonderful. And then, like, Christmas on top of it. And then after Christmas, my sister is getting married. So, like, December is just going to be a really crazy month. And then after that, I'm back in Colorado for a little while.
Do you have, like, cold weather there? What's the weather like for you now?
Honestly, we're recording this, it's early December around, it's like almost December. It's 25 degrees.
What? You're like in shorts or something over there.
I had like, before we did recording, I had all the windows open. It's like the sun is shining. It's really weird being in the mountains because we could get snow tomorrow. We honestly could. I have no idea. But just the mountain weather is really different for me. So I'm definitely adjusting to that. The weather is all over the place. So it'll be neat. I hope we have snow at Christmas. We've already had snow twice this year. But I hope we have snow at, like, when I come back for New Year's and stuff. So that should be good. But the rest of the month of, like, December for me is going to be lots of jumping around and traveling. And I know that you're going to Iceland, but other than that, I think we talked about your no travel rule for the rest of 2017. How has that gone?
It's honestly, I have been so obsessed with this. I think this is such a good thing to do, because the word that keeps popping into my mind is, like, momentum based. And if you're organizing something or you're doing something, so often it's based on, oh, you do this and then you run into somebody again the next time, or whatever little things like that, and they kind of build up to something. And I feel like I haven't done any trips since September, I think. And I feel like it's just been hyper focused on friends and work. And I've been doing a lot of, like, events that are more related to music things as opposed to, like, more tech things, which I normally used to do. And I mean, we launched this podcast, which was pretty cool, and got that all going. I don't know if you saw this on the internet, Haley, but I had a concert in my living room on Saturday.
I saw that. I did not tune into the live stream, but I understand that it was also live streamed, which is pretty crazy. So yeah, you've definitely been up to a lot of things.
Yeah. So for those who don't know, I had my friend Charlie Hole, you should check out his music, but he, like, we're just friends, like, me and him and a few other people are friends. And he was just on a living room tour anyway. And I sat, like, jokingly, like, oh, how big does the living room have to be? Because I saw he was looking for, like, dates in London. And he was like, oh, if you can fit 10 people in there, I'll do it. And I was like, okay, whatever, I've never done this before. And then, and this is kind of what I mean about momentum based. Like, then we talked with some friends, and our friend, like, our mutual friend got involved with organizing it from, like, day one. And she was like, oh, we should live stream it. That would be so cool. We can just do it on our phones, whatever. And I was like, yeah, that's awesome. But then because loads of my friends are like gadget geeks and I would be talking about this and telling people to come and all that kind of stuff. And my friend, she was like, oh, why don't you speak to this guy? He's got a 360 camera. So the concert was streamed in full 360 view. It was like a 2-hour set. It was, and it's all on Facebook. And Haley, I'm not making this up. I think this may be one of the coolest things I've done in a really long time.
That's amazing.
It was just so cool. And I just know, like, this wouldn't have been possible if I'd been traveling loads, because, like, we kind of, not on purpose, but kind of on purpose, like, we organized this lunch, like, me and my friends, and we had both Charlie, who was the musician, and San, who was the guy with the cameras, like, they met, and they got along really well, and then we were kind of like, okay, yeah, this could work. Because obviously you can't have people working together if they don't like each other. And then I invited them to my house so they could like test out all the equipment and see if it all worked. Then we like spec'd out how we wanted the setup of the living room to be. So it wasn't one big thing. It was like lots of little moments that kind of led up to it.
Yeah.
And I just know like I never would have been able to do it if I'd be doing all of my crazy trips everywhere.
Yeah, I totally get that. I feel like some of my times when I really stuck around Toronto were the times mm-hmm. that my network grew the most and that I got to spend the most time with friends. And I was very happy doing that. And then when I was jumping in between locations, like it was definitely amazing to be able to do as much travel as I have been able to do. But mm-hmm. I definitely felt it. Like suddenly I wasn't on, I don't know, like you weren't in the loop on what was going on and where you might want to be. And like you had to like ramp up again almost. So that's how I felt there. I have not spent even 3 weeks straight in Colorado since I've moved here.
Oh, well, when did you move?
I moved at the end of September. So it's been 2 months, but I've left a couple times. So I am hoping that 2018 will be the year of less travel for me, because I feel like I've done a lot. I did a lot of travel 2015, 2016, and 2017. So like I'm ready for some chill times.
It's crazy and it's so cool. What I even get this when I spend lots of time at home, like in Iceland, because at first I'm just kind of like, oh, I don't know, like what am I gonna do, whatever, and then before you know, suddenly you're just in everybody's loop. So you get invited to things and things just start happening. And I love being able to do that in London. And what I've found working on this podcast with you and doing this live event is I know so many talented people and I love working with my friends. It's just so fun.
Yeah, that's amazing. I love that. I mm-hmm. am definitely hoping that the more time that I spend in Colorado next year, maybe I can like make some friends. I don't know, that would be great. Like I'm trying to organize like a clothing swap with like one girl that I know and I'm like, well, that's not really, we need some more girls obviously. So definitely hoping that the more time I spend here, I think it just naturally will happen that like my network will grow a little bit more. So looking forward to that.
Yeah, it's also crazy just because, you know, when you're here, like you get invited to parties and then you meet cool people there as well. And it just builds on each other. Like, yeah, I've been really saying all of this. I think 2018 might be more travel for me, but I haven't made any firm plans yet. But I have definitely been enjoying this. I want to say low-key time in London, but I feel like it's been the opposite of low-key.
But it's been time in London, like time actually in London. So you don't have any themes in mind for 2018 yet?
I feel like it's very difficult for me to talk about it really before I kind of like sync up around Christmas with everybody I work with and stuff. I feel like because I work remotely and normally we all meet up around Christmas, like in my mind, that's the kind of time when I'm going to properly take and like map out the year.
Yeah.
So I'm guessing I'll probably spend some more time in the US next year, but none of that is confirmed. It's not confirmed.
It's too late. I'm already excited.
But I really want to see my sister in New York again. I really want to see my family on the West Coast again. I'm going to this wedding. If I'm going to be doing these trips, I kind of want to trick you into meeting me somewhere.
No, you are traveling anyways, and I have a guest bedroom, so yeah, we can both stick to our themes.
Also, our mutual friend, too, was hanging out with me in Iceland. I spoke to her recently, actually, and her boyfriend. they're staying in the Bay Area at the moment. Mm-hmm. I would love to go to the Bay Area as well. So nothing's planned, nothing's official, but I kind of have my eyes on the US a little bit for 2018.
I like that around like Christmas time is when you do your planning, because I think that's definitely true for me too. I think it's going to be after Christmas for me this year, because I think Christmas is going to be a little crazy mm-hmm. with all the things going on. But definitely like right before 2018 is when I do the reflection on 2017 and then like goal setting for 2018, but both personal and professional. Do you do personal ones? You just mentioned work.
See, okay, I feel like in so many ways, we have a lot in common. And in so many ways, you're just a such a better person than I am. I feel like I'm like letting you down. I don't know. I know, basically, is my answer. So actually, but I want you to tell me, this is why we do this podcast. So can you tell me more about like, what is it? Like, explain it to me like I'm five. Like, what is it? Like, what do you do? I feel like I don't know anything. I'm from Iceland where nobody is that organized.
I hope that one organized Icelandic person is listening to this podcast just to call you out on this. But I mean, I'm happy to explain what I do. Like the review that I do is where I sit down and think back to the past year and 12 months. And I have a list of questions that I don't have on me right now, but I can definitely include them in the show notes that I prompt myself yes. with. And they are things I've stolen them from other blog posts. So I'll add credit. They're like a mix of other blog posts, but they're things like, what's one thing that went really well this year? What's one thing that you wish could have been improved on this year? What's one thing that you didn't accomplish this year but that you still want to accomplish? So kind of those like thought-provoking questions where it really makes you think back to the year. I don't think I'll be doing this question again, but 1 year I did a question that was like, if this year had to be classified in a movie genre, what would it be? And like okay. there's like all those sorts of questions just to kind of get you thinking of like, how did it go? What can be changed and what should be different next year? So I always do that one first. And then after I've done that and I've sat with it for a little while, like this is a several day process, but not like all day, but like I'll spend like an hour one day doing something and then I'll hang out with my family and then like another day I'll do something else. But the process for goal setting, I try to always get done before the first of the year because it's really important for me to start on the right note. So it'll be in the last couple of days of the year that I will start to look back at my reflection and think, okay, like what did I want to achieve next year that I didn't achieve this year? And how can I work that into my goals? So I'll start to make a list. And then I use sort of a modified Warren Buffett framework for goal setting. And I actually have written about this on the Buffer blog.
So it's a Warren Buffett blog post you wrote?
I read this blog post about Warren Buffett and the way that he does goal setting frameworks. And essentially, Warren Buffett says, you know, write down a list of things that you want to accomplish. And he says to write 25. I think that 25 is a lot. So I usually end up writing about 10. And then he mm-hmm. says to pick, if you're writing 25, you pick the top five.
Oh, okay.
And then those five go on your priority list. But the mm-hmm. like the kicker here is that the other 20, they go mm-hmm. on an avoid at all costs list. And they get no time or energy until you've completed something of the five. So like...
That is very interesting.
Yeah. I find that five is too many for me. So what I do is I write down probably usually it's about 10 things that I want to accomplish in a year. And then I'll label them. So I have different like categories for my life. So like maybe work, maybe financial goals that I have, maybe I have fitness goals, whatever they might be. And I'll label them and then I'll just only pick one per category. And I'm trying to keep myself to between 3 to 4 categories right now. So you end up having one goal per category. So like you're not working on 2 or 3 fitness goals at a time. You're working on one fitness goal and one financial goal and one personal goal and one work goal, right? So like it's a little bit more manageable, I found. So that's my modified version of Warren Buffett's framework. And we actually use it on the marketing team now at work.
No, I think this is so valuable and it's so interesting to be having this conversation because I feel like this year has like already been a year of reflection for me in many ways. Nothing I can specifically point to, which is maybe why I should do this. But it's just, I've been really aware of it. And yeah, and I think it's sometimes nice. Also, oh, this is something that is kind of related. And I think this Warren Buffett thing that you were explaining is why I took to it, is because I know it's coming up to Christmas now. There's maybe like 2 or 3 weeks when we're recording this till Christmas. And I'm finding myself, when I scan through like my OmniFocus list, is I don't just look at things as in, oh, am I going to do this now? But I'm like, am I going to do this before Christmas?
Ooh, it's like a hard deadline.
Yeah, and then if I'm not, I'm going to be like, do I want to move this over to 2018? Is it this valuable that I'm going to take this task and move it over to a new year, and I'm going to start my year with looking at this thing?
I love that. I really, really like that.
And it's really weird because this didn't really happen. Like, I didn't set out to do this, but I was just looking, because also something that has happened, maybe it's just all the daily stoic quotes, or I don't even know what it is, but something in my brain is operating differently, because I used to always think that if I didn't like complete all my to-do list items or something, I would just be like a failure and I was so bad at things. And now I'm almost more looking at it as like a filtering process, where I'm like, well, clearly this hasn't been important enough for me to do it already.
Yes.
So let's just delete it.
I love that. I love that. Almost like time to reassess everything and decide if you really want to spend energy on that in the new year.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting what you said about like needing to accomplish many tasks to feel like you've had a productive day, because I think that that's something that's changed for me as well. Maybe it's also Daily Stoic, so thank you, Ryan Holiday.
But I like Seneca.
Yeah, I used to have so many things in my to-doist every day, and now if I start my day with too many things, I really like, I'll get overwhelmed. So I need to narrow it down and look at what are the top three. So I try to only have three priorities for work in a day, and if I accomplish all those three and I want to look at what I have on the list for tomorrow and like do some overachieving, that's great. But like, I just try and focus on three things, and it's made me way more productive.
Yeah, and I think lots of these little tasks that you have are like not your actual job, because it's just like, oh, remember to pay this bill, whatever, boring stuff. And lots of it is just kind of like a small tedious thing. And sometimes I just kind of skim through all my to-do list and I'm like, none of this is actually that important. I should focus on like this valuable thing at work that's an actual output.
Yeah. That can be the struggle between having personal and work things in one application. Have you ever thought of like having OmniFocus for personal and Todoist for work?
Oh.
Those were some great sound effects.
Yeah, I paid for those. That's such a good idea. That's a really good idea, because I don't know. Yeah, that's really interesting, because you're right, because yeah, that's okay. This is going to be like a little seed that's been planted, and this is going to be like rolling around my brain for a little bit, and I have to process it. So thank you.
You are welcome. Next episode, we're going to be like, and Habby now has 4 task management applications on her home screen.
I'm seeing some things that I need to kind of think about, because sometimes the main problem I have with it is very often things that I'm doing are kind of like either a project that is kind of difficult to define because I need somebody else's input on it, or it's like a follow-up on something else.
Yeah.
So sometimes it's quite difficult to exactly know what I'll be doing when I walk into the office, because maybe there's a feature that isn't working right and I need to be talking to the developers, or I need to be testing it all day or something. And that's not really like a checklist item type of thing. It's just, I'm interacting with somebody and it's like a back and forth.
Yeah.
So it's not like, oh, write this blog post, check, or share it on Facebook, check. It's not, because it is based on what's happening in the company, and I kind of have to be available to the team for that, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
But seed planted, check.
Can I ask you a question that I'm just curious about? For some reason, this came to mind. Mm-hmm. Do you have any beginning of the year traditions?
Okay, it's actually very interesting you said that. I don't even know if we should talk about this on the podcast, but last year I did Dry January.
Oh, yeah.
So, like, no drinks. It's not because I'm an alcoholic or anything like that. I was just aware of, like, London has a really, like, boozy culture, and I was getting really tired of it.
Yeah.
And what I loved about the Dry January is that it was, like, an excuse I could use. So if people were like, oh, should we go for a drink or whatever? I'd be like, yeah, I'll come with you, but I'm not going to have a drink. And if people were, you know, because sometimes people give you like a hard time. They're like, oh, what do you mean? And I could just say, oh, I'm doing Dry January. And that was like the end of the conversation because everybody knows what it means.
I honestly hadn't heard of Dry January until you did it last or this year. But mm-hmm. I don't know. The one that I knew about was Sober October.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was really cool because it just kind of tuned me into being more aware of like drinks, and also because I don't really like drinks all the time, I kind of want to do things that are not always drink sweet drinks, just because it gets really boring.
Yeah.
So, and it's not good for you.
And it saves you money.
So it's been weird because ever since I did that in January, it's not that I have like never had a drink since. That's not the thing. But I'm just more aware of noticing it and being choosy about it. So it's like, okay, I'm choosing to have this drink. It's not I'm doing it because everybody else is having drinks. And I also try to organize things outside of just like, let's go to the pub or let's go for drinks. So I've been doing, I think this has been mentioned on the podcast, I have like a little breakfast club where I go meet my friends for breakfast before work once a week or once every 2 weeks or something. I sometimes do co-working with my friends. So one of my uni friends, she got in touch and she was like, hey, it's been ages, we should do something. And I was just like, yeah, hey, do you want to come with me to work? And we could just co-work for a day. And I've been attending like running group things. And I've just been keeping my eye out for things that are not drink related.
I love that. It's true. It's like such a default to ask people to go for drinks, but there are so many. Mm-hmm. It almost makes you more mindful of how you're spending your time and if you really just want to be like sitting in a bar or if there are other things that you can be doing. So are you, does that mean that you're going to do it again January 2018?
Yeah for sure. I read an article and I have in my OmniFocus, of course. I've had it for a year in my OmniFocus where it's like, read this article again in December, because I just had it if I would forget. But I haven't forgotten. Like, it's been, I don't know, it's not that I never go to the pub or I never have drinks or anything like that. It's just I'm more intentional about it. And it also makes it more fun when you go.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
So yeah, I'm definitely doing it this year. And if anybody's listening and is kind of just tired of always having to go to the pub, I know this sounds like such a first world problem, but it is really draining, especially if you don't really want to, but you feel like you kind of have to. I definitely recommend doing Dry January because it just gives you an excuse to be kind of step out of it for just, even if it's just for a little bit.
Yeah, and maybe we can share the article that you mentioned in the show notes too.
Yeah, sure, of course. Yeah, what about you? Do you have any? Also, yeah, so that's kind of my, I don't know if I'm going to do this every year, but it was definitely worth doing this year, and I'm definitely going to do it again now in 2019. Sorry, okay. I'm so confused about time.
It's okay. I know, me too.
So do you do anything?
I have a couple of random ones. Beginning of the year, I change all my passwords. I know, it's super random. I don't even know when this started a
hang
few
on,
years
hang
ago
on, hang on.
Hold
before
on
before you carry on, I read on the internet, and the internet doesn't lie, we all know that, that the average person has about 150 passwords to various accounts. So are you talking you go through every single thing, or are you just talking like email password and Facebook password?
I go through everything.
You go through everything?
Yeah, I go through everything. I do every social media account, every email account, work and personal. I do like Dropbox, Todoist, all of the applications that I use. I just hit refresh once a year for my own security purposes so that I'm not using the same password all the time. And like, I don't know. And then I don't know if this is like ruining my password security, but I make my passwords like so that when I type them in, I'm like happy typing it in as many times a day as I might have to. So yeah, that's what I do at the beginning of the year. So I start the year off with fresh passwords.
Very committed. Also, you probably shouldn't answer this either because of security reasons, but I'm hoping you don't have the same one for everything.
No.
Okay.
I don't.
So like if somebody just guesses now they don't have access to your entire internet life.
Oh my goodness, no. But I feel like I almost have like tiers of passwords. I don't know how to explain it. Like I'll make like really complex passwords for things that I definitely don't want people getting into. And then
yeah, I do that too.
For like, you know, when like silly things that you have to create an account for that like, you know, you're never going to use, but you have to use it this one mm-hmm. time because you really want 20% off your pizza. Like that stuff, I use all the same password.
Yeah. It's also like, you know how sometimes these type of things get hacked and you don't want your crazy good password to be on the list if this is like a web service that's going to get hacked for all their passwords.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's one thing that I do at the beginning of the year. So like... set the goals at the end of the year, beginning of the year, I changed all my passwords.
Okay, so where are we at?
I think we did how has the year gone, and I think we did mm-hmm. what are some priorities. So maybe it's almost like yeah. reading.
Oh, I just have one quick question about work things yes. to you. And also to the audience, because I'm just very interested to see. Do you have a human spreadsheet?
Can you elaborate on that?
As in like humans, work people that you know or want to get in touch with like email addresses and companies where they work and where you're at and how you know them and this kind of keeping track of interactions you're having with basically like industry contacts you have that are not like your friends or anything like that. They're just people it's good for you to be able to reach them in the future if that you need to kind of thing.
Okay, I have two answers, and I don't know if either of them are what you're looking for. Okay. Also, I just want to say I love this question because only we would be thinking of putting people in spreadsheets. Anyways.
No, because people do this.
Okay.
I met this lady at like my cousin's house who was like this fancy finance lady, and she's also really bad with people, which is not a good, great thing if you're working in like a very kind of human-facing industry.
Yeah.
And she's probably like 10 or 15 years older than we are, and she's been working there for a long time, and she's quite high up, and she's a woman, so everybody knows who she is, and which is kind of sad, but like everybody knows who she is because she's quite present, but she's really bad with faces, and also everybody she knows is just a bunch of suits, so she has to like remember who's married to who and the names of the babies and stuff. So she told me this was like 2 years ago probably about, you know, she has a spreadsheet where she even writes notes like, this is the name of his wife. He has two kids. Rosie just, like this kind of people spreadsheet.
Oh, okay. Hold on. I just want to say the first thing I thought of for spreadsheets, I keep all my media contacts in a spreadsheet and I update when I last email them and like what they write about and when they last covered us so that like I know when I'm emailing them again. But that doesn't sound like what you're looking for. But I do that. The thing that she does where you write down...
I don't mind. I'm just curious about any kind of keeping track of contact spreadsheet, anything.
Well, I guess I have three. So like one is the work one for media contacts, which is an actual spreadsheet. The other one that you mentioned where she keeps track of like people's children's names and stuff like that, I do that in people's contact cards. So like let's say we're hanging out and you talk to me and you're like, oh yeah, my favorite kind of tea is... rosemary, and I really just want some rosemary tea. And
is
I would
that not a spice?
It's a spice. I was thinking rose hip. This guy, I don't know. Anyways, I would like casually open my phone and open your contact card and write down tea, rose hip. And then when I was looking for Christmas presents for you, I would go down and look for what I wrote in your contact card. And some people have really long lists. I just take notes. When people tell me stuff they're interested in, I take notes because I know I won't remember and I want to be able to remember for gifts later.
Oh my God, this is the problem with doing a podcast because you can't see my face, but my jaw literally and physically kind of dropped. That is amazing. I need to do that. I feel like I have so many humans and I'm trying to remember how they're all connected to each other and all these little things make such a big difference.
It does. Okay, I have one more way that I keep track of people.
I'm listening. Yeah.
In a Trello board. I keep, so I have this Trello just for people and locations, and I have it organized by locations. So like each new board is a location, and then I have the person's name and I can drag them across. And I do that because sometimes when I travel, I forget where people live. So like before I went to Spain, for example, I wrote down everyone that I knew in Spain and put it in that Trello board so that I would make sure to like remember to reach out to them. I did that for New York at one point too. And it's just like, then if someone that I know from New York moved to Spain, I can just drag it over and I remember to keep in touch with that person based on the location that they're in. So I reference that one when I'm traveling.
That's pretty cool. I like that too.
So do you not have any and you're just like fascinated with human spreadsheets now?
The thing is, I'm pretty good with people. So I've kind of been able to like glide my way through life.
What a gift.
No, like, I know. Like, I'm pretty lucky. Also, like, yeah, I'm pretty lucky like that. But I find myself, this is happening, like, a few years ago, I literally never had the situation where I, or very rarely had the situation where I wouldn't remember somebody. And also, this is like the, I have little tricks, you know, so you make people feel special. That's always what you want. So if I knew that I'd seen somebody before, like I'm quite good at the like, oh, I'm so bad with names. What was your name again? Or something like that. But like now I feel like I've met so many people in the last 2 or 3 years. And especially because I feel like I'm having the problem the finance lady had, which is I'm from Iceland. So people remember me because they're like, oh, you're from Iceland. Like, I don't know, like it's a blessing and a curse in a way, because I hate being the person who just doesn't remember. Like this happened to me earlier this year. I was at somebody's birthday party, and this girl comes up to me and she's like, oh my God, happy, oh, blah, blah, all this. And I was with my other friend and she just looked at me and she read me completely. She saw that I had no idea who this was. And I was like, haha, wait, where? And she was like, wow, you don't remember me? You follow me on Instagram. I was like, what?
Oh my gosh.
And then I looked, I hope this, she never listens to this podcast, by the way. And then I checked on Instagram, and not only did I follow her on Instagram, I had liked one of her photos earlier that day.
Oh my goodness, no.
But I like had no recollection of where I met her or when, or, and I still don't. I hope she never listens because I feel awful. But I hate this. Like, I don't like this. And I'm like, okay, what's a system that can like kind of... because I find this is happening. Like, this was the worst one I think I've had. But I find this happening every now and then where people are like, I'm like, oh, I know I've met you, but I don't remember. And also now I was telling you, I've been going to like some more like music related events and things like that, where I just need to know people's name, company, email address, what's their angle on things. And I just need to have all that information available.
It sounds like the contact card system would work for you. Like if you're grabbing someone's email address, get them to put it in your phone or whatever. And then you can just use notes and it transfers over. Like I still have notes from my first ever iPhone that I took notes on about people. So that maybe could work. I totally get your problem. I totally understand why this is a struggle.
Thank you. Yeah. Does it sync between the contact and the email? Does that work like that?
What do you mean?
So if I like, because normally when I meet people, I would just email them. I wouldn't necessarily take their phone number, but you put those people as well as your contacts, or how does that work?
Yeah, you can add people to your contacts just with their email, not necessarily by adding their number.
And that's what you do? You put person.
Yeah. And like I get my contacts is like honestly pretty crazy. It can get really crazy. Like instead of the last name, sometimes I'll put something so that I remember the person. Like I have some, like I'll put someone's first name and then I'll put like Kate's friend as the last name. So that if ever I'm looking for this person and I can't remember who she is, I can be like, oh yeah, that was Kate's friend. And I put it in that way. Or like I'll put in company. Like I'll really fill out the contact with as much information as I have about that person at that time. So that next time I just remember. So I keep it all in contacts because it's like I'm gonna have my phone on me probably when I meet them, so I can just like really slyly look at my phone if I need to. That hasn't actually come up. Usually I just use it for writing down people's preferences for like gifts and colors and tea and stuff, just so that I can be ready for the holiday season. But I feel like this could work for you. But this is like such a struggle. If anyone in the audience has a system that is different, that has a good suggestion, I would love to hear because I feel like spreadsheets would get really convoluted for me. So I don't think, even though I love spreadsheets a lot, I don't think it would work for me.
Good thing about spreadsheets though, it depends. Like, I think there's a difference between like a personal contact and like you were saying about like the media people. It's like, these are not people you know in any way. This is like, I just need you. Just need you. You're an email address to me. Yeah, take that sound bite. Yeah. No, but this is like, oh, I need to be able to find this person and find their email address like that. I need to know last time I sent them an email. Like, I understand how that's a spreadsheet. And I think for, because also it can be, everybody's name in this country is like James or Chris or Ben. So sometimes it's easier to find people like by company or something like that because everybody's just called James.
That should make it easier for you though, honestly. Like, really. James. Yeah.
300 entries.
No, just like when you know, meet someone, if you don't remember their name, just like, James, is that you? Take a stab at like a really traditional British name and see what happens. Talk about books?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
So, what are you? I feel like I have waffled on loads about books and they like lost all of the episodes. So it's your turn now. Is there anything you're reading now you want to talk about?
I have been doing a lot of reading. It's been really wonderful. I've just been doing lots of reading. I think that in an earlier episode, I talked about balancing self-improvement books with novels, and I've really hit on the proper stride there again, where I'm always reading a novel and I'm always reading another book that's not a novel. So there's like some fiction and nonfiction happening, which has been great. So nonfiction wise, probably my favorite book that I've read in a long time is called Rest, Why You Get More Done When You Work Less, which, like, what a title. And it was such a great read. I feel like it's honestly totally transformed the way that I work, and it will last forever. And I'm probably going to have to reread this every now and again just to keep getting the lessons out. But what the author did is he went over daily routines and work strategies of very famous artists and people that you would know from around the world, presidents, prime ministers, like just really successful, accomplished people. And he proves time and time again that it's not about working, getting the most hours in. It's about getting really quality work done, setting up routines so that you're at your most productive, all of those kinds of things that I'm totally obsessed with. So it was an incredible read, and it's already changed my routines. And I really loved that one.
Wow. So what is there any like specific thing you've kind of like taken from it and already started doing? Or was it just like a re-emphasizing things you were kind of already doing?
I think it re-emphasized a little, and it definitely taught me some things. But the main thing that I like can't get out of my head now is, after I start my day, I usually grab a cup of tea and I start working. And it's definitely a bad habit for me to not start working immediately and to like check some email or like see if anyone sent me a tweet, because I don't get the notifications on my phone. So like, maybe I'll just go do it. And I've completely stopped that. So the main thing that I try to do now when I start working is focusing on what a couple of my main tasks for work will be, and then trying to get in 3 to 4 hours of just really solid focused work with no distractions. And the rest of the day after that can be distractful. It can be like answering Slack and answering emails and doing like more admin things that I might have to do, like getting back to someone on something. But the first part of my day is now really devoted to how I need to spend my time. And I know that definitely won't work for everyone, but that's what is working for me. And this book has solutions for other types of work too that I won't be able to outline, but that's probably the main thing that I've taken.
That's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, and I think I mentioned this on the podcast before, or we, do you know Paul Graham?
I don't know if I do.
Paul Graham, he writes, he's an essayist. I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. And he writes these essays, basically. And he probably has about 40. And I'm pretty sure it's just paulgraham.com. We'll put links in the show notes. And it's funny because the website was probably built like in the 90s or something. And it just still looks like that. All the links are just like the blue underlined typical links. And the website has literally no flash or anything. And it's amazing how it just highlights how none of that matters, because his essays are really good. And he has one on writing, how to just write with clarity and don't overcomplicate things. He has loads of other ones that I can't recall from the top of my mind. There's one in particular that I go back to and I read regularly, which is called Maker's Time versus Manager's Time.
Oh, I've heard of this.
Yeah, and it's like, okay, whatever you're doing, are you in the process of producing? Because I know you kind of probably do both, and I feel like I kind of do both as well. And it's like, okay, are you in the position where you need an interrupted block of time to write something, which is, or do any other kind of production, or are you available to people to be spoken with? Like, are you giving feedback? Are you reading people's messages? All this kind of things. And those two are like, and he talks about it from like the perspective of a schedule, where like, if you're a programmer, if you're a writer or something, you need like 2 3-4 hour blocks in a day of uninterrupted time if you possibly could. But then if you're a manager, you might have meetings all day. So you just have little bits of times here and there.
Yeah.
And I feel like I don't really fall into fully either or, but I'm kind of conscious if I'm just waiting for feedback and I'm having this like interactive time, I don't even attempt to write anything or do anything where I'm producing something. I just, if I'm waiting for something, or it's like I say something and then I'm waiting for something to hit back, I like, that's when I just fill the rest of the time with, you know, yeah, admin things or little tasks here and there I can kind of use to clean up.
Yeah.
But then if I am writing something, I'm like, okay, everything else just has to wait.
Yeah, definitely. I feel like this book really like reinforced that for me. Just like the mindset.
It's really cool.
And it was just cool to read about how people like Winston Churchill and like, I don't know, just like some amazing people have lived their lives and get work done. And a lot of it has to do with routine. Like, it's not very exciting, but it's, I think that was the point for me, is that it just had to be simple.
Yeah, I'm obsessed with this, like how you spend your time. I find it so interesting. I started reading Deep Work. I haven't finished it though.
Oh, Cal Newport. That's a good one.
Yeah, where he was talking about exactly the same thing. It's like, if you want to learn something that's complicated or produce something that is well made, you just need loads of time where you can't have people bothering you, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, he has. Yeah, I think he has some really interesting concepts. Based on his book, we have Deep Work Wednesdays for the engineers on our team. So like, don't expect to get in touch with them on Wednesdays, because they are deep working and they're not on Slack and they're not in email.
Deep work. So that's really interesting one.
Yeah. I have another one that
I
am reading for a workbook club, actually. And I don't think I would have read this one if it hadn't been.
I have such a crush on your company. They're so sweet and lovely and amazing.
The like book club. our little book club. And I don't think I would have read this one or else. I watched it as a TED Talk. And so I almost sometimes, when I do that, I'm like, oh, I'm good now. I get the point. Like, I don't need to read the book. But it came up and I was like, you know, I want to be a part of this book club, so I'm just going to read it. So it's Grit, the Power of Passion and Perseverance. It's Angela Duckworth. And she has an amazing TED Talk if you haven't watched it. But then she also has an incredible book. And it's all about, like, persevering in life and how the people who achieve really great things have grit, this thing called grit. And you can actually take a test to find out how gritty you are.
No way.
Yeah. And then it's like a really simple 5-minute survey on her website. And then she walks you through all of the ways to develop grit and to be a more gritty person in her book. And like, it just really resonates with me. I didn't really expect it to be this fascinating to me. I can't put it down. Like, I keep reading it. It's incredible. And a lot of her examples that she uses are athletes. And she talks about like Olympic swimmers and those kinds of people that have to put in hours and hours of practice. But they talk about how, again, with this time thing, it's not about putting in more hours than everyone else. It's about putting in more deliberate practice than everyone else. It's about how you spend your time, not how much time you spend. And I think that's just, I don't know, that's just been incredible to read. And then, like, I've been doing martial arts for years, and I would like to continue doing it for years. And so, I don't know, the whole thing was just really wonderful. So I'm only halfway through Grit, but I definitely recommend it.
This idea of grit is really interesting to me, because I've been in London for a really long time now, and I remember when I was first here. I know this sounds really weird, but I felt like it was almost an achievement just like not dying while you lived in London. Like, it can be really rough just because it's so expensive. You have to be so smart about everything. And like, distances are really far. And yeah, so you have to be good with money. You have to be good with your time. You have to like not be dumb, basically. And after being here for so long, like, some people just leave because they don't want to be here anymore, or their visa runs out or whatever. But like, I've seen the city like break people. Like, it's really weird to, I don't know if people that live in cities, like big cities, have this experience, but it's also hard to be like away from your family. And also you kind of have to be like, why am I doing this to myself? Like, I don't have to, kind of. But then it's really weird because then when you kind of come out on the other side of it and you've been here for a while and you know other people who also have, it's something that everybody has in common. And I don't know what it is. Maybe it's this grit thing you're talking about, because it's almost like this resilience, or just maybe it's drive. I don't know. Like, I find this a really interesting, there's something that happens if you've lived in a city for a long time where it's just kind of like something in you is like a little bit tough.
I like that. Maybe it is grit. I don't know. You should take the grit test and let me know what your score is.
I should take it. Yeah. That would be really interesting.
Yeah.
So those both sound like nonfiction books. Do you have any fiction for us? Or
I do, but I don't know if it's going to be of interest to everyone. But yeah, that's I've been reading the Lee Child Jack Reacher series for like several years now. So I'm on the 12th book, but like, I don't expect everyone to really dive headfirst into those. But those have been really quick reads for me, and it's like watching a movie. So I love those. I had another book that's like, it's not fiction, but it's kind of like historical nonfiction. I don't know how to describe it, but it's called Liar, Temptress, Soldier, Spy. And it's the story of four women who were undercover in the Civil War.
And that's cool.
It's like, it's nonfiction. This actually happened, and all of the quotes are from these women, their diaries and like news articles about them. But it feels fictiony, like it feels like a story. So I really loved reading that one. And I felt like I almost had to read it because I know very little about American history, and people kept talking about the Civil War. And I was like, I really need to look into this more. So it was kind of amazing to see the Civil War from a female perspective too, and like see how women were involved. So I can recommend that one for sure. And I have one other random book that I just started reading. I'm only in chapter one. But it's a cookbook, but it's not, it's not like just recipes.
I wasn't expecting that.
I know you weren't expecting that. That's why I had to bring this one up. It's not just recipes. It's like essentially principles of cooking and like the philosophy of cooking. And it's like how to understand these things that make food good or bad. And like, if you understand these things.
I've seen this book somewhere.
Is it Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat?
I don't know, but I'm so intrigued.
It's called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, the book that I'm reading. And I'm like one chapter in and I already feel like I know so much more. I'm only on the salt chapter and it's like life-changing already. So it's not like a bunch of recipes. It's like how to use salt in your food, what heat does to your food. And she shares her story as well, the author, and she has an incredible culinary journey. So it's been a really good read so far. And it's like, it's not self-improvement. It's not a novel. So I don't know where this is fitting in, but I'm reading it.
I feel like this is self-improvement. Being able to cook a good meal is like a serious skill.
That's true.
And it's actually interesting you say that, because my mom, she cooks really good. And she doesn't just cook cutesy home mom food. She makes just amazing food all around. And she makes really good salads in particular. And she told me, now I'm not going to remember the rule, but basically like the base for a good salad is you need something crunchy, something fatty, like a cheese or an avocado or something like that. Some citrus, like lime or vinegar or like something, yeah, like that flavor family. And one other one, like something leafy or something. I don't remember what it was. But it's basically like these, it wasn't a recipe she had in mind. It was just like an understanding of how do you make a good salad. Like,
yeah,
salad with nothing crunchy is just kind of boring.
Yeah, that's totally hitting on what this book talks about.
And it's weird because I remember I was making this salad, because I do that sometimes, and I was just looking at it and I'm like, oh, it's missing something crunchy. And like that just came to me. And it was really weird because, yeah, so that sounds like a really cool book.
It's funny because I think I was around you like when you really knew what the list was from your mom, because you've told me this list like twice now. And I remember one time you just like you had it at the top of mind and like you just spouted it out really quickly. So we'll figure it out.
Find it for the show notes.
Yeah. We'll ask your mom and we'll include it in the show notes. But the book I'm reading is called Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat. And I'm really excited because I don't think I've ever like considered myself to be talented at all in the kitchen, but we recently did like a food delivery service where they give you recipes, and mm-hmm. I felt like just accomplishing the recipes, I felt really accomplished. I felt really good to be able to make good food. So now I'm like, I want to be able to feed myself really well. And maybe this also comes from, I no longer live in a city where I can walk outside and have access to really delicious restaurants anymore. There are a couple of great restaurants here, don't get me wrong, but we are not going out to them all the time because there's like three. So we are going to have to make a lot more food at home now.
It's really satisfying to be like, yeah, I hit that recipe like 100%. And to me, it's almost like I love actually cooking by recipes, where it's just like, oh, here's a recipe, check, 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 check. Like it's like a checklist. And cooking is just such a good skill to have as well, because you can just kind of blow people away. What you were saying about the Lee Child thing was interesting though. I don't want to like just glaze over it, because I feel like one of the questions I had for you, I feel like maybe this is just me asking you a bunch of questions, is I've been having this problem where I feel like the books that I have on my Amazon or on my Kindle are really imbalanced. So I'm finding myself just looking for something to read, even though I have loads and loads of books. But a lot of them are really serious and they're really learny something. And I feel like this year I've like been processing a lot of different things, and I don't really need any more information at this point. I know that sounds really weird, but I kind of just want a little bit more. I don't, obviously still doing the Ryan Holiday daily readings, but I don't need anything more in just for the time being. In this kind of like super heavy, I'm giving you lots of information and things for you to evaluate and things like that. And so I've been looking for something to read that is just fun to read and isn't like thinking reading.
You don't have like a genre that you're already interested in for like fiction? See, other than Harry Potter?
This Harry Potter actually is interesting you bring that up, because it kind of reminded me how easy reading can be.
Yeah.
Just because I read them so quickly and they were just so kind of like, oh, this is fun. The thing is, maybe I've just kind of ruined things for myself. It's because I am so interested in like narrative and building a story and things like that. Sometimes I just see through the books really quickly. Oh, and I don't know if I should tell this story now because I want to keep this episode positive. But I got so angry earlier this year. I wrote the angriest email of my life, Hayley, because of a book.
What?
Oh my God, I may have to tell you this right now. Oh my God. I have never been so angry in my entire life, I think, Hayley. This was a crime. This was a crime. Okay. So, I knew about this problem I had. And I was like, okay, let me find something to read. I'm doing this by memory because this was ages ago and I don't have all my notes. There was this book, because I follow Ryan Holiday's rule that is like, if there's a book you think is interesting and you want to read it, just buy it. So I follow this rule. And then I was on holiday with my family. This was like in June or something. And I didn't want to read any like learning things. I just wanted to read entertainment things. And I found this thriller on my Kindle. And I was like, great, okay, I'm going to read this. And then I started reading it or attempted to start reading it. And I saw it was the second book in the series.
Mm.
And I was like, okay, I'm just going to buy the first one, whatever. Bought the first one, which was almost like a novella. It wasn't like a full-length story, whatever. And it was kind of okay. And I was like, okay, yeah, I'll read the second one. The second one seemed to be like the big, successful one. And I'm reading it. And it's like not the best written book I've read or anything. But it was like a woman FBI agent, and she was like taking it on, and she was like a badass. And the dedication of the book was from this guy, Nathan Goodman is his name. And he was like, this book is dedicated to my daughters, you know, whatever their names were, two daughters. He's like a Southern American gentleman. And he was like, there's not enough role models for them in the world. So I'm going to write this book to show them like a strong woman, you know, that is like a complex character, basically. And I was like, that's really sweet. Like, now I really like this guy. Like, I think he's cool. And so I read the book, and it wasn't like a perfect book, but it was like captivating, and the characters were interesting, and the plot was kind of interesting, and it was all about like terrorists, and that's the worst, and we have to save America, which is great entertainment. And I was reading it, and it really got me, and like somebody was, you know, sick, and somebody was injured, and it was all this drama, and it was great. And then I was about to turn the page on my screen to read the final chapter. And Haley, do you know what it said on the page where the final chapter should have been?
Coming soon.
It said, sign up to my email list to download the last chapter of my book.
But didn't you already buy the book?
I already bought the book.
Oh, I already bought goodness.
His first book, because this was the second book. So I had paid for not one, but two books. This was a series. I knew that. I had already in my mind already bought the next one because this was turning out to be like an enjoyable holiday read.
That's infuriating because now you will never have the full book in one place.
Isn't it? And I was like, as a person who loves product, I love marketing. I love both of those things. I'm like, you sacrificed your product.
Yeah.
To build marketing to people who are already paying for your product.
Yeah.
These are not the people you need to reach, baby. You need to reach people who are not reading your book. Those are the people you need to reach. And I have never been so angry. I was like, and this book was dedicated to his daughters. It was dedicated to his daughters. And he just sacrificed. How hard is it to write a book? Like, it's really hard to write a book. This is like something that is like an achievement.
Oh my goodness.
And he just undermined all of it for his freaking email. And I understand email list is like the most important asset in your marketing toolbox. I know all about it. I've written blog posts about it. I've had presentations in front of like an audience talking about it. I know. I understand. Like, I paid for your product. I paid for two of your products. I was going to pay for three of your products.
Oh, man. Wow, that's such a bad, I've never even heard of that. I would be,
I was so angry.
The author, like if Lee Child did that with his books and I didn't get the last chapter, I would also write really, really angry emails. And I wouldn't feel bad about it.
No, and I wrote, I'm not looking at this in front of me. It's probably a good thing because if I would have like talked about this on the time, I probably should have like walked away from the microphone like in rage. But I'll send you the email and I don't know if this is appropriate for the show notes, but I'll send you the email. And I said to him, I was like, listen, man, I was so buying you. Like, I love that the book was dedicated to your children. I love the characters. I was rooting for everybody. Like, you had me. Like, you completely had me. And I was like, I'm rooting for you, man. Like, I'm rooting for you. I almost just want to be like, do you want me to do your marketing for you? You know, like, I'll do it. It's fine. And I wrote him this email that was like, man, you pissed me off. Like, you pissed me off. And I'm telling you this. And I said to him, I'm writing this to you and not like posting this on Medium because you had me. Like, you completely had me. And I wrote him this email and I didn't expect him to read it because like, I never expect anybody to read. Like, when it's like that. And he wrote me back.
Oh my gosh.
And he made it worse.
Oh, did he defend himself a lot? Was he like, no, this was the great choice?
No, he was just like, kind of like, oh, okay. Thanks for the feedback or something.
Oh.
It was just completely like, oh, I've read your email and I don't give a
Oh my goodness. Okay.
So that was the angriest email I wrote of the year.
That's infuriating.
Yeah, I'm so glad you're with me on this, that I'm not being unreasonable.
I don't think you're being unreasonable. The audience will let you know if you are, but I don't think you are.
But you haven't had a bad experience like that.
No, I have not. I haven't had an awful experience like that. I mean, I've definitely had books that I read them and then partway through or even like sooner than that, I'm like, well, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
But I don't write angry emails, obviously. Like, I'm sure you don't either about that. Like, I just stop reading the book and read something else.
Okay, yeah, I think that was actually the question I had for you before I went on this crazy rant about my angriest email of the year. So when you start a book and you don't like it, like, what do you formally decide, I'm not going to read this book anymore? Or do you just kind of like...
Well, I mean, I probably don't open it again. I guess it depends. Like, do I not want to read the book, but I should? Or do I not want to read the book and, like, I definitely don't have to? Like, for some of the self-improvement books, if partway through I'm like, well, I don't want to read it, but I should figure out what the core principles are of this book.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Then I skim the rest of it if I really don't like it. Like, there's some books that I read that are self-improvement that I just can't handle the examples. Like, they're really terrible, terrible so examples true. That don't resonate with me. So I'll just go through and read, like, the first paragraph and the last paragraph of every chapter, and I'll get the information I need that way. But if it's a novel, this actually happened with one of the other book club books. It's a novel I started reading. It just wasn't hitting the spot for me, and I was forcing myself to read it, and I was finally like, that's it. I don't want to spend time on this anymore. So I just stopped reading it, and I get pretty guilt-free about it because, like, I don't owe that person a complete read of their book, like, whoever that person is, if it's the author. I don't owe anyone a complete read of that book, and if I don't want to read it, then I'm going to save myself some time and not do it.
Yeah, I think that's the correct policy. I feel like I just needed to hear that from somebody else because, yeah, I don't know why you have this guilt feeling of... I have it about the books that I can't finish. I don't know why I have where this guilt feeling comes from. Maybe I have some underlying issues.
Oh my goodness. But do you finish the books? Like, if you start reading them and you don't want to read them, do you force yourself to finish them? Or do you just feel guilty? Do you stop reading them and then it just, like, hangs over you for the rest of your life? Like a sad book cloud.
Yeah, maybe this is something I should do in 2018. I should just go through all of the books that I have and be like, yeah, I'm never going to read this book. Also, I think what you said about the self-improvement thing is so bang on, because normally those books, not like the really good ones, but a lot of them are just kind of, they have maybe one good point. And most of the times they even get to it pretty early.
Yeah.
And then they're just explaining it again and again from different perspectives, because different things resonate with different people. So I kind of get it from, like, a strategy point. But... it doesn't make for a very enjoyable read, to be honest.
Yeah. Okay, hold on. I really like what you just said there, where you said at the end of 2017, you should just go through and give up all the books that you don't want to read.
Yeah.
I totally agree with that. There's this thing, and that's a process that I heard of, and I wish I remembered where I heard this. It might have been a podcast. It might have been in a book. But essentially, the concept is that at the end of the year, you write down, or you look at what's taking up your time project-wise or dream-wise, and you give some things up. Like... maybe it's my dream to do something like, I don't know, like travel to space. And I haven't spent any time on that. And it's really not looking like it's going to something that I'm going to prioritize. Maybe it's time for me to give that up and focus my energies elsewhere. And, like, if later in life I want to revive it, I totally can. But if I'm not spending any energy and it's just making me feel bad, like feel like I'm not accomplishing my dreams right now, maybe it's time to give it up. So I feel like that could be a good exercise to do at the end of the year. Like, what are you giving up? Some books, some projects.
I think that's a really good... I was listening to a podcast the other day that I quite like. I don't know if you'd like it, but I like it. It's called Dear John and Hank, and it's like the Green Brothers, who actually wrote Turtles All the Way Down, which I also read and I really liked. It's a book that came out like a month ago or something. So they have a podcast, like the brothers between them, and Hank Green is like most famous for doing 1,000 different things. Like he... like the brothers together, but I think Hank is like the main drive behind it. They started and run VidCon.
Crazy.
They have like their own YouTube channel that is like basically a legacy YouTube channel. It's one of the really big ones. They've started numerous other educational ones. That's where I watched like the history thing I watched the other day. And like John writes books. They're just... machines when it comes to like producing really high quality, really thoughtful like educational content. And so they were talking, the podcast though, it's just much more silly and then being silly, so this is why I don't know if you like it, because anyway, what Hank said on the podcast was that he has, which I thought was really interesting, he has a list that is called one day projects.
Oh.
Which is like projects that he... and this, obviously, he has resources because of his place in life. And his projects, he knows he can't just do in like a week or something like that. Like, he knows he basically has to dedicate some amount of his time to, or hire somebody for, which he obviously can. And then he has this list. And then every year or so, he goes through the list. And so presumably, he then picks out something. He's like, yeah, actually, now it's time for this project.
I love that.
Or he just goes like, this can wait.
Yeah, I think that's really important. I feel like we all have to be really strict with our time and energy.
Yeah.
And focus. And it's something that like can really easily get away with from you.
Yeah, and it's like, it's so easy with all the social media, oh, everything has to be perfect on Instagram all the time, to just want to do everything, to be like, oh, I have to go to the gym 5 times a week. Oh, I have to only eat this kind of food. Oh, I also have to read 3 books a week. Oh, I also have to be super popular and have like thousands of friends. Oh, I also have to travel all the time. And oh, I also want like this job that's amazing. It's really easy to fall into like that. I have to do everything exceptionally well.
Yeah.
And then that's just not possible, I think.
Yeah. Pick a few instead.
Yeah.
Yeah. So obviously the FBI book was not your favorite book this year. But if you had to pick a top book of 2017, what do you think it would be?
This is a really good question. The thing is, I'm actually kind of struggling with this question. I feel like I've read some interesting books this year, but I don't know if I have like, I've read lots of interesting books like the year before that are like, oh, standout favorite. We're not talking about that. We're talking about this year.
We are.
And there are kind of two, and they kind of go together in my brain in a weird way. And it's not because... It's the Mark Manson book, like, which I think was great. It had really good points. But it wasn't even mainly that one. There's this other book called How to Be an Imperfectionist.
Ooh.
And this anxiety about, oh, you have to do everything, is something has resonated with me since I was like 5. My mom used to make fun of me all the time because I would always compare myself to like the best one in every one thing and not realize people were somewhere good at some things and not good at other things. And I would be like, no, I want to be the best at everything. But the thing about this book is that it's not that great. Like, it's not that well written. I'm not like in love with the structure of it, or I couldn't put like, I didn't even find it super captivating. I wasn't like, oh, I have to read the next page. Like, I still kind of got through it, but it was by no means like, oh, I picked it up and before I knew it, it just flew by. And, you know, it's, so yeah, it's kind of weird how it didn't have any of those things I would, you know, need before I put like the happy stamp of approval on it kind of thing. But like, it just came to me at the kind of right time. I feel like I was kind of ready to hear this message. And it almost makes it like meta good because it's called like just let go of things and do them anyway, even if they're not super perfect.
Yeah, that's awesome. That sounds like a great book. I didn't even know that you read that one. I don't think that we've talked about it.
Yeah, so I think if I had to kind of like pick a book of the year, I wouldn't necessarily say this is like the best book, but it's definitely probably been like the most influential. And I know this is working, like kind of hashtag, no, not hashtag, air quotes, permanently, because literally on Saturday when we were setting everything up for the concert, we had this, I had made my flat look pretty good because obviously like there was going to be filming, not just filming at one angle, like 360 filming. So I was like cleaning up my shelves and, you know, moving all my furniture to clean like underneath all the furniture because all the furniture had to be moved and everything. And so I made like my living room really perfect. And then I went into my cupboard that is full of things and just everything fell everywhere. And it made this big banging noise. And like the guys were already here because they were getting set up. And my other friend who was helping out was here as well. So there was probably like 5 people in my flat. And Hayley, like 6 months ago, this would have been like the most embarrassing moment of my life because I hate like the idea of having like a messy home. I want everything to be perfect before people come around. But I was kind of like, yeah, no, this is where I keep all my random stuff. So that just goes here. And the guys, this is the beauty of living in the UK, is people are so helpful and nice. So the guys kind of came and helped me pick up all my stuff and like to put it back away. And 6 months ago, I would have found that terrifying. I would have just found it so, like, weirdly, like, oh my God, I you can't see my mess, or you're going to think differently of me or something.
Yeah.
But I was just kind of like, it doesn't matter. Yeah, everybody has a messy cupboard somewhere.
Yeah. I feel like you should have at least one, if not more.
Yeah, so it was, it's kind of like a meta beauty to it.
I like that.
I think I said this quote already on the podcast, but it's like, don't let perfect be the enemy of good.
You have, but worth yeah. a re-say.
Maybe this is like my mantra. I don't have a mantra. Maybe this is going to be my mantra.
Ooh,
now.
Yes. 2018, you have a mantra now.
Ooh. Okay, but I want to know, what's your favorite book of 2017?
Well, since you gave two, I'm going to give two.
I don't follow the rules. You know this about me.
You already broke the rules. So, okay, well, this has been my favorite book since the 2nd of January when you told me about it and I downloaded it. But The Daily Stoic by Ryan Holiday has just, like,
oh, yeah.
impacted so much of my life. And I feel like the little daily lessons and then, like, trying to remember them throughout the day. And it's just really changed a lot of my thoughts and behaviors in my life. Maybe because I was reading it all year. So I still haven't decided if I'm going to reread next year. I don't know. Like, it's on the table. That's definitely a top book for me.
Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one because it's just, it doesn't feel like a book to me almost.
What does it feel like?
It's like, no, this sounds really cliche, but it kind of just feels like, I don't want to say lifestyle, but that's the word that comes to mind. I already bought the diary.
You already bought the journal?
For next year.
That's on my list.
Yeah.
Definitely want that next year.
And it arrived, like, yesterday.
That's amazing. I'm yeah. buying several people the Daily Stoic for 2018.
That's a good Christmas present. Right? Are you buying the dead tree version?
The dead tree version? the physical book? Yes.
The physical book.
Some
I'm
people
sorry.
Will be getting the physical book because not everyone in my life has Kindles like us.
Okay, that's such a good present.
Yeah, I think it should be good. So that's one of my top books and also probably a Christmas present. So if you know me, IRL, you might be getting this. And my other one I've already talked about, so I'm not going to elaborate too much more, but that book on rest was also just really impactful on
You're putting it in your top.
Yeah, spot. It's in the top. And it's probably going to be a reread also, like I mentioned. So that's it. That's what I'm very excited for the 2018 book list. Do you know how many books you read this year? Do you, like, track that?
Okay, so I actually have my Goodreads open because it's really weird because I've done some things wrong. So it's telling me I've already surpassed my challenge of 25 books by reading 27 books. But that's not entirely correct because one of the books came in twice and I don't know how to change it. And then there's, like, a couple that I just marked as having read, but I'd read them like the year before or something. And I didn't mean to add them to this list because I really wanted to keep it sacred, but it just didn't work. Life is full of disappointments. Like,
oh wow.
So I'm guessing in like the low 20s.
Somewhere. Okay. And was that your goal was 25 though?
My goal was 25. So I'm sure I'll read like one or two over Christmas.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I should reach 25, which I'm really proud of because last year I also set the goal for 25 and I didn't reach it. So I think the Harry Potter books helped loads because there were so many of them.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. Yeah.
So what about you?
Well, last year my goal was 25 and I read like 30 something because my sister and I were doing this reading challenge. It got really intense. But this year, my goal, okay, I had like a weird journey with my reading goal. At the beginning of the year, I was like, it would be cool to read 100 books this year.
Oh, wow.
And then after some reflection, it really didn't take too long for me to realize like that would take the fun out of reading. And that was just not how I wanted to spend my year reading. Mm-hmm. So I lowered it down to 25 because in my mind, that's a good number. It's like just over 2 per month. Like that's what we're looking at here. And like that's something that I can get behind. I'm at 25 right now and we still have a month left of the year. So I upped my goal to 30 because I have lots of long flights and lots of days off over the holidays and I love reading and I have some good novels. So I think I'll probably end up hitting closer to 30.
Wow, that's so cool. See, I feel like it's easier to read novels.
Oh, yeah.
Because you just get through them quicker. Also, I think I just wanted to add about the Daily Stoic is it almost introduced me to this idea of buying and reading books and not kind of pressuring yourself into like finishing it. So yeah. There's a couple of books. I just kind of want to give them like a honorary mention almost. Okay, so here's an example of these things that I like. 100 Ways to Improve Your Writing. This is like just tips and tricks and like stuff like that. But you can't read 100 of them and take anything away from the book.
Yeah.
So I like just kind of having these and just reading like one or two chapters.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really good practice.
Mm-hmm. And then there's another one. I really, really like that one. But now I can't possibly find it because...
It's like buried deep in the Goodreads list.
No, it's on my Kindle, actually. I'm flicking through. Maybe I can't find it. I can't find it. Maybe I'll just find it for the show notes. So I think the Daily Stoic has done that for me. It's like introducing me to things where I can just read like a little bit of something and think about it and process it and take it with me. And there isn't like a pressure like, oh, you have to finish this book right now kind of thing.
Yeah. It did drive me a little bit mad to have it not as a completed book all year because I really wanted to just check it off my list. I don't know. That's just like a me thing. I don't know what that was about. So it definitely taught me some lessons in patience in addition to all of the like philosophy lessons that were actually written in the book.
Yeah. And it's sometimes really crazy because I don't know if you've had this experience, but I've almost had this experience where people get really angry about something and I just look at them and I'm like, why are you so angry? You know? It's definitely weird. It's almost like it's taught me to like notice things like that I didn't really expect to get from it.
Yeah. And like working on myself too. This has been a year of like insane news and things happening in the world. And so it's been really helpful to have this reminder to stay calm and to let things go and to move past things and to focus on where I actually want my energy to be. So there's been some really incredible lessons through that book. Definitely, if you have not read it, and you've probably heard us mention it like 100 times by now, worth a read. Worth a read for 2018.
Yeah, we want to hear about all your people's favorite books.
Yeah, share on anywhere on the internet. We are all over the place. So you can send us a tweet with your favorite books at mworkwork or use the hashtag MWW. And you can find more about all of our show notes and all the links that we talked about at makework.work. Feel free to send us any of your thoughts on books, questions, Harry Potter quotes, anything else that comes to mind. And will this be our last episode of 2017? Should we say goodbye until 2018?
I don't want to make any promises.
Okay, bye for just now then. Just right
neither
now.
Neither like this or, yeah. But also, people can listen at whatever time. Like, that's the beauty of podcasts. Maybe somebody's listening and it's like 2020 or something. Like, we don't know.
Whoa.
maybe our podcast becomes really popular in the future and somebody's listening to like the back catalog and now they're on episode 5.
Okay.
All right, so that's the show?
Yeah, should we leave it here?
Oh, we didn't do claps. Should we do claps?
Oh, okay.
For the syncing? Okay, I'm going to do a loud clap and then I'm going to hang up and then I'm going to call you back, yeah?
Should I clap too or are you just clapping? Are we both clapping? Who claps?
No, I clap.
Why don't I get to clap?
You clap. Okay, you can clap. maybe give me 3 in a row. Okay.
That was so exciting.
It's like, and scene.
Oh, I think we did that one at the same time.
No, I don't think we did it at the same time.
Well, you could line up the audio so that it sounded like we did.
Yeah, and everything else is out of sync.
Okay.
A man who is kneeling on the floor. There's a gold encrusted cross above the door. And in his heart he is praying. He does not know what for. There's a man who is kneeling on the floor. As the preacher lights a candle for the dead, he believes every word he's ever read. He is drunk now from the another candle for the dead. It's low. Yeah, but what did you expect when you rolled another marinade? Like every soul you claim to have blessed. Well, there's no more angels left in the chapel often raised. Girl who denies the virgin birth, her knowledge couldn't satisfy her thirst, and they fought her for her mind, but the devil got there first. To the girl who denies the virgin birth, the boy who is marching off to war, so naive, well deceived and ill-informed, too eager to die for someone else's cause. There's a boy who is marching off to war. It's lonely, yeah, but what did you expect when you rolled in on the marionette? Like it is the soul you claim to have blessed. Well, there's no more angels left in the chapel I've unraised. Garden lies a skeleton of truth, where the priest can pick his own forbidden fruits, hidden from the eyes of evidence and proof. In the garden lies a skeleton of truth, and it's lonely. Yeah, but what did you expect when you're only another marionette? Like it, you claim to have blessed. Well, there's no more angels left in the chapel I find rest. Don't worry.
Don't worry about a thing.
Oh, is every little thing?